Hello, and welcome to Eyes on Success, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete. This week, we'll be talking about some interesting research that is aimed at making the computer-human interface a little bit more blind-friendly for us all.
We'll be speaking with Sina Baram, a blind PhD candidate and computer scientist, about some of the research that he's doing in that field, including a new tool that he's developed to evaluate how accessible websites are. But first to our tip of the week. This week's tip comes from Sina Baram.
I fell in love at a very, very young age and never lost that passion for just how amazing technology is. I really think it's one of the greatest things in the world. And not just because it's cool and fancy and can let you do things like play Angry Birds on the subway, but because you can also really change the world with it. And I think in really profound ways, and you can really improve people's lives. You can affect real change with technology. The awesome thing I think about technology is that it's an enabler, and it's only going to get better. Hopefully, people who are doing research similar to mine and others are taking us in that direction. We're making access to computing easier, faster, cheaper, more accessible, more available, etc.
Although playing Angry Birds may certainly seem like fun, wait until you hear some of the other interesting work that Sina is involved in.
Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll meet Sina Baram. Can you start by introducing yourself?
Hi, I'm Sina Baram. I'm a PhD student at North Carolina State University in the Department of Computer Science.
I gather you have a visual impairment?
I do. So I'm mostly blind. I have no light perception in my right eye. In my left eye, I have some light perception as I look around the room here. For example, I can see the sunlight streaming in through the window and maybe the border of the window with the wall. It's okay to maybe cheat a little bit for O&M purposes when you're walking around and need to find a hallway. But for all intents and purposes, I'm a Braille reader. I use a screen reader. I'm a cane traveler. So mostly blind.
And what's the cause of your blindness?
In the right eye, it's retinal detachment. In the left, it's complicated. And it's complicated because they actually don't know. So I did a little bit of research on this a while back and went pretty much in depth, did a genetic workup, did a physical and everything. And some of the best minds, you know, Hopkins and et cetera, they couldn't really figure it out. But the functional reason is retinal detachment and then a couple of lines across the vitreous gel in the left eye, which explain some of the occlusions of vision that I have in my left eye. But really, reason unknown, ...
So did you learn Braille and orientation mobility as a child?
I did, because even though I could see a little bit more then, so for example, when I was young, I would squint up. I mean, my nose was touching the glass of the screen, whether it was a TV screen playing Nintendo or whether it was a computer screen reading DOS. And I would do mode 40, which was this obscure command to make the text twice as high. And I could kind of read that because it was white text on a black background. But at that same age, you know, it was definitely apparent that I had a vision impairment. Around 7 or 8, I was playing tennis against the backboard in just a tennis court, and I hit the ball. I missed the return, but my face didn't. And so, you know, the ball hit me in, I guess, my eye. And because there was already some partial retinal detachment, that was completed. So that's how I lost vision in the right eye. They made me wear a patch as I was losing that vision over the right eye so that my left eye would get stronger. And it did to some extent. And that's sort of where I've been ever since. And so I learned cane travel. I learned Braille. I think it was around second grade or so. Textures, you know, those books where you feel the different textures and you get used to paying attention to what your fingertips are telling you and all of those good things.
Were you mainstreamed into the regular public schools?
Absolutely. So pretty much from K through 12, college, everything, all was mainstream.
You are listening to Eyes on Success. 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 Success.
This week's focus topic is Sina's ongoing research in the field of human-computer interactions, with a special focus on using computers to aid blind and low-vision people in both the digital and the real world.
So maybe you can tell us a little bit about the research that you're doing. It sounds quite interesting.
Sure. I did my undergraduate work at North Carolina State University, and I decided that was great. I really loved computer science. I was starting to really do things on the side and projects and that sort of thing. And I was positive I was not going to go into accessibility research. I didn't want to be that stereotypical blind guy doing accessibility research. So it's like, okay, I'm not going to do accessibility research. So what else is there? Bioinformatics. Let's go look at protein folding. Great. That's interesting. Did that first semester. This isn't really for me, but it's really fun. So then I did, maybe I want to do privacy and law. Maybe pick up a law degree along the way. And not for me, but again, a lot of fun. And so stumbled around a little bit, did system security research, kernel hacking for the tech heads out there, operating systems, you name it. And then finally, I was like, okay, look, you gotta give in. One of those talks with yourself where you keep gravitating towards accessibility research and doing things in this community. And there's some unique opportunities to not do maybe some of the classic stuff. And so why not take some hard computer science and apply it to accessibility and see where that goes? And so that's how I stumbled into a field known as human-computer interaction. Some people also refer to parts of this as human-centered computing. There's lots of different names. But HCI looks at the problem of how we interact with computers and how can we make that process better? How can we make it so that we have to spend less time telling the computer what to do and more time actually interacting with the computer as it's doing what we want it to do? And what I like to concentrate on in that field is, so there's some unique opportunities here. Computers are very good about enabling us in the virtual world. For example, a screen reader can read you what's in the computer, can help you navigate the web or a command prompt. But also, computers have a nice ability of helping us make the real world, the physical world, accessible as well. And I've always been fascinated by that aspect of human-computer interaction, so that we're not only making digital materials accessible, but could we make the real world more accessible by using a digital device like a computer? And so actually, that was a little bit of background. So to answer your question a little bit more, the specific research I'm working on looks at eyes-free access to graphical information. So this is the only PhD babble I'll put in. I'll give you the long, complicated, fancy-sounding name, which is something along the lines of an approach concentrating on the user-controllable reduction of complexity for eyes-free exploration of graphical information.
We interviewed Sean Kane about a year ago. I gather you know him.
Yes. Sean is one of, A, the nicest people in the world, and B, probably one of the smartest people in this space. I have read many a paper, and I have cited him many times. I have a macro to cite Sean's papers.
So he spoke also about enabling the visually impaired to access graphical information and maps and stuff. Can you relate maybe some similarities and differences of your work relative to his?
Sure. Sean is a professor at University of Maryland, Baltimore campus. Sean's at UMBC, and what he's concentrating on, I don't want to really speak for his research because it's far, wide, and awesome, but basically one of the things that he's presented work on is large touchscreen displays and how blind users can interact with touchscreen devices. Some of your audience is familiar with, for example, VoiceOver on the iPhone. That's very much related to Sean's work. And so that sort of technology, that sort of research is going on in this space, not only for accessing components, not only for accessing the operating system, like reading your email or reading a text message, but also for reading graphical information. So there's a difference here. One is reading the things inside of the computer, like the controls and just moving around. But the other thing is, can we just use this to look at pictures? Can we use this to look at graphs or flowcharts? And so that's a problem that I'm interested in. And I believe to some extent, Sean is also interested in. And so we have some approaches in that space.
Now, if you're interested in hearing the show with Sean Kane, that was number 1204 back when it was still called Viewpoints. But you can get to all the Viewpoints shows in the same archive as the Eyes on Success current shows. And that's all at www.eyesonsuccess.net. And that was a great show. Sean's doing some fascinating work.
So what is the difference between the work you're doing and the kind of activities Sean's involved in?
My work looks at, for example, on maps, I do this thing where I have something called a discretization grid, which is a fancy way of simply saying it's a grid of squares. Think of it as a virtual grid of squares on the screen. So as you're touching the map, as you're touching the touch screen, let's say it's a tablet or a phone, you hear what's under your finger. And that's great. You can hear North Carolina, South Carolina, Virginia. That's wonderful. But you might hear it a lot of times if you run your finger over Virginia and you're still on Virginia, and that this can be really annoying. So how can you make this less complicated? That's what that user reduction of complexity part was all about. How can you make this less complicated so that the user controls how much information they hear at what period of time? And so think of this virtual grid as an elastic grid. You can change the number of squares on the screen. You can make it a 3x3 grid or a 10x10, or you can even make rectangles like a 15x5 grid. And you can very easily do that, both with gestures and the buttons on the side of the tablet. And when you do that, then the system, the computer, only reads out when you cross into another grid square. So that might sound kind of trivial, but what it allows you to do is it allows you to move your finger across and treat the whole graph as only 5 squares long or only 10 squares long. And so the user is now placed back in control of how much of the graphic they want to see, they want to explore, they want to hear about. When I say this, oftentimes people say, oh, well, that's kind of like Zoom. That's kind of like zooming in or zooming out. And sort of, except we're not zooming in, because you can do that too. You can zoom in on North Carolina and go around Raleigh or Chapel Hill or Charlotte or Greensboro. You can zoom in on the nation's capital and explore Washington, D.C. That's zooming in, making the image, you know, you're going closer, you're bringing the information at a higher detail, level of detail. This grid, though, it can operate at any zoom level. It just lets the blind user or the eyes-free user, we like to say, because it's not only for blind people, control how many places there are on the screen to touch.
So now your research, is it aimed primarily at the mechanisms in terms of the computer science in how to make this kind of interface? Or are you also studying what is the most effective way for a visually impaired person to interface with these kinds of applications?
So by asking that question, you could be a reviewer for this conference at this point. That's an awesome question. A lot of people don't ask that. So they look at the technology and they stop there and they say, oh, that's cool. That's cute. But you asked a really great question. And that is something I'd like to say that I concentrate on because it's really important, which is, okay, this is great. This is a nice approach. Is it effective? Is it useful for people? And so one of the questions that I actually need to answer is, how effective is this approach? And this is the data to support that. Oh, and by the way, don't just take my word for it. Here's the approach. Other researchers can try it out and see what kind of data they get. And so we can all work together to make this kind of thing more effective in the long run. So that's a really great question. It's both. It's the computer science, the algorithms, the programming, that sort of side of it. But it's also the, okay, now let's go test this on 15 to 20 people, get some results, go back to the lab, do some more programming, come back and try it again. So it's an iterative design.
And that's what makes this a PhD thesis.
Exactly.
Are there ways that this research can be extended for other applications other than maps?
One of the things that we like to concentrate on is, can you make an approach that's generalizable? And so, okay, let's make Google Maps accessible. That's great. You can touch it. You can talk with it, for example, and sort of like Siri, for example, and it can respond and it can behave well in that way. But can you also extend this to something beyond maps? And so some of the areas that we're looking at are flowcharts, bar charts, and graphs. And when I say graphs, I mean both the sense of computer science graphs where you've got vertices and edges, but then also graphs from algebra class or calculus where you've got curves. And so with flowcharts, what we did was we got a picture of a flowchart, and you could scan this in, for example. But imagine the following scenario. This would be the perfect case. You have a middle school student and she receives a flowchart in a class, right? And there are different approaches. Maybe she takes it to the Braillist or the resource room. Maybe she has a sighted colleague explain it to her. But these aren't really great approaches because either they involve time or somebody else. And when somebody else is explaining it, they might have the best intentions but aren't a great explainer of the graph. So it would be great if she could just slap it down on a scanner or take a picture of it with her tablet or smartphone. And then start touching it. The computer would let her know that it's orienting the graph, and then it would start doing some analysis on it using computer vision algorithms and a little bit of AI. And it would say, okay, look, you've got 7 vertices and a couple of edges on this graph. Let's say it's a flowchart. And so then she can drill down, so on and so forth. And so this allows somebody to receive a piece of graphical information and access it independently in a nice free way without having to depend on somebody else or some third party for translation. And I think that's a pretty powerful concept. So that's one of the things we're working on is flowcharts. And then bar charts. So we recently had an election year, data all over the place. You turn on the news, you look at the web, there's just data all over the place, whether it's polling data or economic data, all sorts of graphs around. Well, it would be really great if you could just get access to these infographics. If you could look at a bar chart or a pie chart and be able to touch it or be able to ask the computer, well, what's the midpoint here? Is there a trending average up or down? What about the 200-day moving average? You know, let's say you're looking at stock data. Or what if you want to touch it and hear that information be sonified? So for your readers who are maybe not familiar with what sonification is, it's the concept of taking information and exploring it in an audio way, not just through speech, but actually through non-speech audio. So a parabola, y equals x squared, back from algebra, it would sound maybe something like this, like that. And that would be sonification. So could you do that for more complicated graphics as you're touching it so that it's interactive and multimodal? And that's just a fancy way of saying you're interacting with the computer with multiple ways of interaction. You're touching it, you're talking to it, it's talking to you. Maybe there's braille output on the side for additional information. Maybe there's haptic feedback, vibration, that sort of thing. So that's the kind of areas where it can be extended.
Now, he mentioned sonification, and we actually did another entire show, number 1248, on exactly that topic, in which we talked with Dave Engebretson, a blind geologist, and he demonstrated audio versions of graphs of numerous geological phenomena, and we also spoke with John Taylor from View Plus about their audiographing calculator, and he did some demonstrations of that.
When we were setting up this interview, you mentioned that you also did a lot of consulting. Can you talk to us about some of your consulting work?
I'm working with Design Science. There's a gentleman there by the name of Neil Seufer. They make the Math Player plugin, which allows you to read MathML on the web. And Neil Seufer, he's one of the gems in the AT business. You know, he's been in there for a while. He's a sighted guy. He's not blind or anything, but he is just, you know, so passionate about doing it the right way. And I will go scream at my boss because he's saying there's not a good business reason to do this because we have to do, you know, he's that kind of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And I just really respect him. So he brought me in as a consultant on this graph to make the reading of mathematics accessible in audio, not just by reading it, but trying to convey some of this information that you're getting via Braille. And so, for example, things like 3 plus x, the quantity over 5, you know, that sort of thing. How do you say appropriate words where? What's the science of that? But then also, can you interact with this math? How about zoom levels? Can you zoom in to an equation? Once you zoom in an equation, can you move by chunk? Can you move by operator? Can you move by landmarks so that you can then jump between the top and the bottom line and cancel out variables almost as fast as you could do it in Braille? So that's the kind of system I'm helping them build.
And if you want more information on Design Science, their web address is www.dessci.com/en if you want the English language version of it. Can you talk a little bit about the award you got from the president?
Oh, so I was really honored about 6 or 7 months ago to receive an award from the White House. It was Champions of Change Award. And this was an honor to recognize work that persons with disabilities are doing in actually the space of persons with disabilities in the context of what's called STEM, or science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, STEM. And it was a really great honor. It was a lot of fun. We got to go up to the White House and actually talk on a panel. And I got to meet several really interesting people that are doing great work in this space. One other thing that came out of that I'm really happy about is that I met Christine Reich there. And she is at the Boston Museum of Science. And so it all links together. I met her there. And then a few weeks later, I was flying out to the this workshop, the Creating Museum Multimedia for Everyone. And so it's just some great opportunities, and it's those chance encounters that I think really enable great research to happen and great things to happen. So it was a lot of fun, and I'm still very, very honored and privileged to have received that.
And did you get that for some specific piece of research?
The recognition was for my work on my TKISI system, which is the name of the system. It stands for Touch It, Key It, Speak It, which is the system to make maps, bar charts, flow charts, graphical information like that accessible in an eyes-free way.
Now for this week's high-tech item, another one of Sina's research projects that he calls Access Grade. An awful lot of people who develop websites really don't know much about what's required for accessibility, but you're working on a project that will automatically evaluate a website for how accessible it is. Can you talk about that a little bit? I actually visited your page and checked it out on a couple of sites that I maintain, and I have no idea what your system is doing to evaluate my web page.
The project is named Access Grade, and it was an idea that we came up with a couple of years ago where we were looking at, is there a different way? I don't want to say necessarily better or worse. Is there a different way of evaluating web accessibility that doesn't just do standards checking or compliance checking? And so what that means is there a way of looking at web pages and evaluating whether they're going to be accessible or not to, let's say, a blind user? You have to control your scope a little bit here. Can you evaluate that accessibility not by just going down a list and checking boxes? Okay, images have alt tags, check. You know, buttons are labeled, check. But can you do it in a more fuzzy-feely way using machine learning and some AI concepts, some artificial intelligence concepts? So we looked at some pages, we ranked them, and it works kind of like Pandora. If you've used Pandora, you can thumbs up or thumbs down a song. Similarly here, you can give it a web page and you can give it a score. And it will try to give you its score first. So it'll say, I think this page is a 4. Now, if you agree with me, that's fine.
Hey, I got a 5 out of 5 on both web pages.
Congratulations.
And one of those web pages was www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's great. So you get the score and then you respond to it. You say, look, you know, you say it's a 5. But look, I'm blind, and there are like some unlabeled links here, and this is not that. I'm going to give this a 3, all right? I'm going to give this a 2. And it learns. It then, if you run it again, or if we retrain the algorithm, and I think it's retraining automatically right now on the hour or something like that, it will try to work those suggestions into it. Now, that's the sort of pie in the sky, how everything should work. But in the real world, there's problems, right? This is data. Data is never clean. So what we're trying to concentrate on here is, are there ways of making this process better and more transparent? You said you gave it a page and you said, I have no clue what your system is doing. That was a really great observation. It has zero transparency. It gave you a score, but what does that mean? And furthermore, how could you make that score better? And furthermore, does that score apply to you or to a blind user who also English is not their first language or to, you know, et cetera, et cetera? There's all of these conditions. So what you have to do, and this is a humble thesis, I haven't been able to prove this, but this is what I feel, is that accessibility can be viewed as a function. And it's a function that takes a couple of parameters, if you will. And here are those. I think that the accessibility of a web page is a function of what browser you're using, what assistive technology you're using, what functional limitation you have, and the contents of the web page, of course. I think if you take these four variables, and they're complex variables, they're not one-liners, they're not single words, but if you can take those and you can adequately express those to the computer and have it be able to start understanding the complexities and the subtleties here, you could come up with a really creative approach. So that's what we'd like to change the system into doing. We'd like it to know that you're on IE or Firefox. We'd like it to know that you're blind versus colorblind. We'd like it to know what your previous preferences are so it can distinguish your results from my results. that's sort of the goal there. Now, I'd like to take this opportunity to say if folks would like to help with this project, we'll be more than happy to open source it, to grab some collaborators so that we can keep it going. And the co-creator of AccessGrade and I are really open to collaborating with somebody on it, even handing it over if somebody has more, you know, time to give it some love, and working on it with others. So I'd like to take this opportunity, if I could, to actually make a call out for that. If somebody's interested in that, please shoot me an email.
So not that you need something else to do, but I think it would be great if once your system developed a score for a given web page, that it also explained what could be improved in order to have that page get a higher rating. And then you could encourage web developers to check out their websites with this tool and presumably have them iterate until they get a better score.
I'll actually go one further for you. So what you described was phase two. So for phase two, what we had was, we'll take the score, we'll give you a breakdown of the score and tell you all of the things that are wrong. But let's take this one step further. Remember, I said at the beginning that one of the things I like to do is spend less time telling the computer what I want done. Well, it turns out computers are pretty good at understanding web pages, right? And we already made the assumption that our system is okay at understanding accessibility. At least I'd like to believe that it is and that it can get better. Well, if that's the case, why not have the computer actually fix the problems? So phase three is, let's take those accessibility problems and let's actually create a temporary page, or just shoot, manipulate the code and shoot it over to the developer to say, if you fix these things in this way, I get a 5 when I rerun this analysis. And here are the changes you have to make. And oh, by the way, let's view how that would look so we can guarantee we didn't change anything visually just to make it accessible, at least nothing that's not wanting to be changed visually. And so that would be phase three of this kind of work, is to make those changes automatic.
So with all of that in mind, if people do want to get involved in this project, how would they do that? Can you give them some contact information or a website to go to?
Absolutely. So I love to hear from you, first off, just on anything. It doesn't have to be related to AccessGrade. If you have questions for me that I can help with, please shoot me an email. And if I can't help, I'll try to find you somebody who can. But to contact me about AccessGrade or anything else, and I'll go ahead and give you my email address. It's Sina, S-I-N-A, at sinabram.com, sinabahram.com. Also, a really great way to get in touch with me in a hurry or more instantaneously is Twitter. I'm pretty active on Twitter, and the Twitter handle for me is my full name, at Sina Bahram, at S-I-N-A-B-A-H-R-A-M.
And what is the website for this web?
For AccessGrade. Mm-hmm. It's accessgrade.com, A-C-C-E-S-S-G-R-A-D-E.com. There is some contact information on there as well. Feel free to use that as well. It redirects to myself and my colleague, Srinath Ravindran.
And if you want to see everything else that Sina is working on, you can go to his general purpose website, which is www.sinabahram.com, S-I-N-A-B-A-H-R-A-M.
As usual, if our listeners missed any of the links or contact information that we had in the show, they'll be available in the show notes at our website, www.eyesonsuccess.net.
That's it for show number 1314. Next week on Eyes on Success, we'll be talking about writing and publishing your own book. We'll talk with Donna Hill, an author, musician, and advocate for the blind. She's written a book whose protagonist is a blind teenage girl, and she describes the process of writing and publishing the book and some support networks she found useful. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to hosts@eyesonsuccess.net or call us at 585-258-0333, and we'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Eyes on Success, hosted and produced by Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy, and distributed by WXXI Reach Out Radio. For detailed information or a full archive of programs, visit www.eyesonsuccess.net. You can also follow us on Facebook at Eyes on Success and on Twitter at @EyesOnSuccess. We hope you will join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. Thanks for listening to Eyes on Success, and have a nice day.